The following program is rated TV-MA-LSV. It contains strong language, sexual situations, violence, and nudity. It is intended only for mature audiences.
Hi, babe.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm getting a little sad because I know about your life and what you're doing your next steps of your life. And
wait, you're making it sound like I'm dying.
No, not dying. She's not dying. She's just moving away from me.
First of all, welcome everybody to Talk Scary.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, I am fleeing California as fast as I possibly can.
Like, I don't think you understand how much that affects me. I just got close with you, and now you're gone and your kids.
Yeah, but I'm going to be back all the time. All my friends are here.
Are you going to bring your kids?
Yeah, sure. Because their godmom's here. My friends are here. Okay. And I promised my best friend that I would bring the kids at least once a month.
Okay.
To stay. So they'll hang out with her and do their thing. And even my housekeeper's like, you know, dying that we're leaving because she's been there before they were born and all, yes. all of that. And she's crying and it's a whole situation. So yeah, I'll be back. I promise. And I see all, I mean.
Yeah. We see each other all the time.
I know, but like doing everything. Like things and.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll be here forever.
I don't. I think my partner and I are kind of looking at houses in Nashville.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, we're thinking of going.
Hell yeah.
It's also, I can't fucking afford anything out here.
Nashville's pretty expensive too.
It is, but it's a lot cheaper than here, and there's land, and you know, I envision my life having like, you know, two horses, a donkey, and four more dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. Hell yeah, girl.
And eventually, you know, a baby. So yeah. I need a home foundation. And as stupid as this is probably going to sound, I've promised my 13-year-old dog, Cody, that I would get him a fucking house and with a yard that's his. Cause I mean, I don't know if you know, like I've lived like a gypsy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if all of you guys think out there I'm like living in this mansion. I have lived like every year. I've moved.
Hell yeah.
I lived in a garage. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, like gave this woman money and like changed her garage into a guest house so I could live there. I lived with like a bunch of moms, like everything. So it's been, you know, it's been a gypsy life for me. Like literally has. So
that's what you do in your 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And then you settle down
now
and you
I'm
have
exhausted.
Kids and you're like, okay, I'm going to get the fuck out of Dodge and I'm going to go live a peaceful life somewhere and just be normal.
Yeah.
Just be normal.
Exactly.
And I can do it. You can do it.
Can I? Can I do it?
Yeah. Look how many people have gone out, you know, in the last decade of friends of ours.
Yeah.
Just people we know, like move here.
Yeah, you don't need to be in LA anymore. You don't need to, especially in this business. You know, you can work from everywhere.
Yeah.
Might as well be happy. I'm tired of hearing fucking fire trucks and loud music and like people screaming on the streets.
Yeah.
I want peace and quiet.
Yes.
You know, I always escape to nature. Always.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I'm
too.
Why can't my home be nature?
It can be.
Yes.
It can.
I'm growing up.
I saw this quote already too, because it's just, you know, why not?
Yeah.
I was reading it this morning. I was on Instagram this morning. Shocker. I don't really spend much time on Instagram, but I saw this and I thought, for some reason I printed it out and I always feel like if something's calling me, there's a reason why I have to do it. And this might be the conversation. It's by this woman named Mel Robbins on Instagram. And this quote said, maybe life doesn't change you. Maybe it shows you to you. Maybe it prompts you to grow. Maybe it pulls away what you can't find the courage to leave. Maybe it shakes you awake. Maybe it shows you the pieces of yourself that you can't see. Mm. Maybe life doesn't change you. Maybe you change yourself once you see yourself. Maybe life was only ever trying to show you the way.
Oh.
That's at Brianna Weist.
Wow, I feel that.
Right?
I feel that. Yeah.
Because a lot of people are like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? What's happening in my
queen
life?
Queen over here.
I get it, girl.
Queen. I needed to hear that. I've been having that for 2 months, you know, with my uncle passing away and then, you know, getting COVID and then my boyfriend getting in a serious accident and like his life path has just like totally changed.
So what is it trying to show you?
You know, I think it's trying, me personally, I think it's trying to show me that I can let go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm that person that clings on for dear life.
Well, you were saying in one of the, I think it was a couple of our episodes ago, that one of your biggest fears was abandonment.
Yes.
So maybe this is sort of a, you know, people do leave, but mm-hmm. people also, mm-hmm. things happen and they don't leave, mm-hmm. they stay around mm-hmm. And that's just, and so is life, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, no, it's true. It is very true. You know, I have a lot of love, you know, I have a lot of love to give. And I feel like sometimes when, you know, it's a weird thing. Like even with my friend group and friends, I will do go above and beyond.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, for whatever they need. And sometimes I feel like I'm doing too much. Like I'm like,
you're insecure about it?
Am I pushing these people away because I'm doing too much?
Oh, I feel that way too sometimes.
But it's just me. It's just us. It's and I think it stems from abandonment. Yeah. Like, I don't want you to leave. People pleaser. Stay.
Yeah. But it's not a people pleaser.
No, it isn't.
It's a caretaker thing.
Yes, it is. It is a caretaker thing.
Interesting. I'm the same way. I get it. I appreciate it though. But I used to worry about that when I was younger too.
Yeah.
Am I overwhelming somebody with always being there to do for them?
Yeah.
What am I so needy for?
Yes.
Am I needy? But really, that really wasn't what it was.
Do you see your reflection in me right now?
I do. I totally.
What is that, Mulan?
I do. I don't know. You're the Disney queen. You're the Disney princess. Miss, so you guys know my Scout and my son have the same birthday. It's coming up.
Pisces bitches and, over here. Watch your wives, watch your kids.
Oh my God. Carter and I this morning on the way to school, we're singing his favorite new song. Are you ready?
What?
Hotel California.
Oh, hell yeah.
He was like, Mommy, can you turn it up? And just jamming in the back seat, in his car seat, singing every word. I've listened to that song 8 million times and don't know every single word. He knows every single word already.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then he was like, can you guys, yesterday we were in his room and I had on his little Bluetooth and my mom was there and sister and we were all, you know, the kids and everybody's yelling. And he's like, can you guys stop talking? Please stop having conversations. I want to listen to music. I need quiet. I was like, you're 4.
Has he been that way with music before?
When he was a baby.
Okay.
If there was a musical that came on or a Disney movie or something, he'd be having a tantrum and he would stop in his tracks.
Yeah.
And he would get sucked into the TV.
Yeah.
And be like enveloped with whatever music was going on. So there's something there.
I hate to tell you, but Carter reminds me a lot of me. I just am just saying that.
That's okay. I'm happy with that.
He's going to be in musicals.
Fly free.
He's going to be a creative baby.
Great. I love it.
I already see what that kid's gonna
do. I love it. We shaved his head the other week.
He's
almost bald. Yeah.
Oh my God, he's bald.
We had all those curls, you know, and he was like, Mommy, my friend had I want my hair cut like that. I was like, you want to shave your head? He's like, can I shave my head? I was like, yeah, let's go shave your head.
Oh my God, amazing.
But you know, I remember like, I could never do shit like that.
Yeah, no.
I mean,
do you
want
to shave your head? Have you ever wanted to shave your head?
Oh, fuck yeah.
I want to fucking shave my head.
But I have a square head. My son is my son.
I want to do it for a role. We need to do a movie together where we like are... I want to do it.
But see, here's my argument.
Okay.
You say you want to do it for a role as though that's the only way that you're going to give yourself permission to do something like that.
But it's also, dude, I'm going out for so many lawyers and doctors right now. Do you see a shaved head lawyer?
I wish. I'm sure there are.
Probably. Yeah. Or, you know, wigs are beautiful nowadays, but I also just, you know, I will.
You know what I mean?
There's going to eventually be the time when I'm probably in my 40s where, you know, you slowly, the short haircut kind of comes.
No, don't you ever cut your hair like you're live in the Midwest and are a nurse.
Why? I want some frost tips.
No,
I want some frost tips.
Do you remember they used to pull the cap? Do you ever remember the cap over your head and you'd pull it through with a pick? And you color it. Oh, it's fucking
God.
Horrific. My mom did that once.
Yeah.
When she had that short, awful haircut. She did her whole head like that. Actually, it was my godmom who's a hairdresser who did it. She put the cap on. She frosted the tips. And then my mom wanted her sides shaved. My mom used to have her sides shaved with a tail.
I can't see that.
But
on
wait,
your mom.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah, I love that.
So she frosted it first. Then she shaved the sides, left the top long, but the sides had, so she had polka dots. From where they pulled it through. So she literally looked like a leopard. With a blonde tail. It was...
Oh my God.
It was the 80s, baby. It was the 80s.
For her next birthday, you need to get that image on a cake.
Oh my God.
You need to get that on a cake.
That would be amazing. That is amazing. If I could find that, that would be amazing.
Oh my God.
I've wanted to shave my head, but you know, that's why tattoos for me, I first started with like, oh, it has to be below the jean line because I don't want to, you know, ever.
Where was your first tattoo?
On my hip.
Yeah.
Over here. It's hidden.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, cool. I'll go up, but never above the bra line because I want to make sure nobody can see it over a dress if I have to wear, you know, for another. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. I have this, you know, I have this this symbol on my back. It looks like this. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
So on the right side of my back, my grandma used to wear a necklace that had like a bunch of charms on it. And she used to tell me that this was like a Jewish thing. Like,
so for the listeners, it's like her thumb going in between.
Yeah, it's like my thumb going in between my my fingers, and I'm making like a fist.
Okay.
She said, it was just to keep evil away. It was like an evil eye kind of thing. So I was like, cool. So I had that, and she had like a Jewish high and like a couple of other things. So I had it tattooed on me. I brought the charm necklace with the chain, and I said to my tattooers, I want to create this going up the other side of my back, and we did it in... You know, and then I went home and I started looking up what that really meant.
What does it mean?
This is like power to the pussy.
Fuck yeah, Danielle. Power to the pussy. Oh, I love that you have that on your back.
This is like power to the pussy.
I'm going to fucking say that at a con when you're next to me. I'm going to be like, Danielle, do you remember your power to the pussy?
Fuck yeah. And the fact that my grandma wore that around her neck her entire life.
Oh my God, I love it.
So it's like a whole, I think it's like a Turkish thing.
Or, have you told your mom? Like, that's,
I don't know if I have.
Oh, you should tell her. You remember when grandma?
Yeah, you know what? And so my grandma was so funny. She would love to hear that. Like, she would be so, she would think it was hysterical.
Happy. Yeah.
Hysterical.
Oh my God, I love that.
So do we have any questions? I know you found, there's some pretty good ones that you got this week. I've got some too, but I want to hear what yours were.
Yes. So this is from a...
Oh wait, before we read, let's talk about our last episode, JonBenet, just real quick.
Yes.
How we were wondering if the brother actually won. Yes, he did. And everybody was... found innocent.
Yeah, from the DNA.
And it is,
still unsolved.
And we talked about, I wouldn't cover for my husband. I don't think anyone's covering up for anything. So it appears to be that after digging into it, that some
it's just so sad
horrific
that they have
fucking
not.
Person came in and did something like this to this little girl.
Yeah, but things have progressed, you know, like obviously, like, you know, what happened from the detectives with that case, too many people coming in, too many people just interrupting all the stuff.
Mess.
Yeah, it's just a mess.
I mean, I would have grabbed my baby. I wouldn't have covered for my man. You know, I mean, I think when shit's hitting the fan like that, you just don't know which way is right or left.
Yeah.
So I hope that whoever did that to her will meet his day in hell if he hasn't already. Obviously, to do that to somebody, maybe he had already had, you know, I'm sure his life wasn't great as a child.
Yeah.
So, okay, on to the sex. Talk sexy to me and then I'll talk scary to you.
Okay, so this person, he says, I'm a younger listener.
Okay.
Okay. And I recently have been exploring masturbation.
Oh.
So, do you remember?
Wow, young?
Well,
do you think?
Do you? I'm assuming probably like 15, maybe 14.
Do boys maybe do it earlier?
14, 12. Okay, 10. I'm hoping that 10. I'm just hoping there's not a 10-year-old listening to this podcast.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? Hey guys, it's supposed to be like a mature audience.
Mature audience, please.
But I doubt an 18-year-old's discovering masturbation.
I'm just
going to
say it's an 18-year-old, Danielle.
Okay, let's just say it.
We're just going to say it's an 18-year-old. Okay. Do you remember your first time masturbating? And have you ever been caught?
You go. I want to hear your story first.
So, do I remember my first time? Oh, yeah, I remember humping everything. Dude, I would hump every surface in the house with the pillow. I just bring the pillow and I just make the whole house my sex den.
Oh, my God. a specific one. So that's how, you remember your first orgasm you ever had?
No, I don't remember my first orgasm. I don't think I remember it. I remember other things about, you know, adulthood, like a tampon for the first time. My mom was, my mom was at work and I got my period and I had to do the tampon for the first time. And it was like the cardboard ones or whatever. And I put the whole thing. And my mom was like, you have to get that out. It was awful. It was miserable.
I have a really funny story.
Really?
I have a few funny stories, but I have a very funny story about that.
Okay. Okay. Share it. Share it. And then we'll.
Sorry, I still got that post-COVID call.
Yeah. Yeah. Share it. And then we'll go into the masturbation.
I only like maybe three people know this story in my life.
Sorry guys, we talk about periods on here. Okay. It's happening. Just FYI, your wives, women, like they all have periods.
Yeah.
It's all good.
So I got my period in a fitting for that movie of the week that I talked about last podcast about that I had to be molested, you know, thing. I got it during a fitting and it was like, what the hell? I was 12. I think I was turning, maybe I was 13 actually. Anyway, so no one told me like, you know, I wasn't going to wear a pad. Anyway, I tried to put a tampon in myself and they were the plastic ones that were like the portable ones where, so they're plastic. Then there's like the little stick is on the side and then you have to take the stick and you put it in and then you push it up and then you remove the applicator and you throw the whole plastic part and just the cotton stays in there for those of you that don't know.
I'm sorry, you just saying that just makes me pissed that we have to do so much stuff as women. I'm just like, come on.
I know.
That's so much.
But we get
teach
to have babies.
A young girl.
Yeah.
Like, so you see this mechanism?
I don't know. I don't have any fear.
Yeah.
I would teach my kids. I would show them.
See, my mom was scared.
Mine too.
A tomboy.
Oh.
So like makeup, like hair, like that stuff didn't exist in my household.
Right.
So I was by myself putting this thing in.
You would show your daughter.
Yes, I would.
Yeah,
I would.
Me too. I mean, I would talk to my boys about all of that stuff. This is so ridiculous that I'm sharing this story, but I don't know if anyone else has ever done this. If anyone else has done this, then comment. I would love to hear your story about it because it's just so fucking ridiculous. So I put it in, and then I you know, it has the little coil part where the stick goes in, and then I left it in, and then I just took the stick and threw the stick away. So I left the whole plastic in there, and I didn't understand why it wasn't staying in. I would cough or talk or walk or do anything and it would just like plink, 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 just come right out. And I took, are you ready?
Yeah.
I took scotch tape.
Oh my.
And I taped it to my vagina. And I was on the phone with my agent.
Oh my God.
Who I actually had a great relationship with. And I would talk to her about real stuff and told her what I was doing. And she was like, oh my God, honey. No. Like it's the thing inside the, oh, so she thought it was hilarious. So when I was trying to think,
like me.
Oh my God. So do you know what the name of my first corporation was?
No, please. I don't want to know. What was it?
Tape It Down Productions. Because I taped the tampon to my vagina. It's so ridiculous.
Oh my God.
It's fucking ridiculous.
But honestly.
Traumatic, right?
Yeah. If that would have happened to me, I don't know what I probably would have done something as silly as that.
Yeah, how do you know?
You don't know.
It's put it in, you remove the applicator. I'm like.
I mean, now I think there's more like outlets and books and stuff
called
for young
internet.
Girls.
Yeah. Yeah. Books.
Outlets.
Our kids are reading.
You mean the internet? I don't go on the internet. Shit.
You said how dial up.
What are you fucking talking about? Shit. It's like me. Yeah, I had the whole cardboard in there, the whole thing, and I had to like go in front of a mirror and go hunting, try to get the cardboard out. My first time, like with my fingers, I'd never done that before.
Did you ever have sex with somebody where the condom came off inside?
No.
Oh.
No.
That's not fun.
Yes, I have.
How'd you get it out?
It was a drunk mess. It was like the Hulk. Bah! Oh. there isn't any mind moments going on in that one. I was like, bah, bah, bah. I gotta go pee.
Mine happened the first time I had sex with not my first time, but the first time I had sex with this particular person. And it was really more, imagine like the first time is awkward anyway with a new person.
Yeah.
And it was, he pulled out and was like, I don't have it.
It's gone in the cave.
Yeah. I was like, how are we going to get it out?
Get a flashlight.
A
flashlight.
Just kidding. I'm sorry. I've got the giggles from your fucking taping your fucking vagina. Okay, I can't get that image out of my head.
It's like, how do I get it out? Like, you have to get it out. You have to get it out, dude. You have to find it and get it out.
Dude, you take responsibility, man. You put it up there. You got to get it out of there.
I don't even want to tell you how I ended up getting it out.
Oh my God, don't tell me. I can't take anymore.
I got it out myself. I'll tell you off air how I did it. Funny. It was horrific.
So I was humping everything. You're humping everything. You know, and like I told you, I lived in the mortuary. So yes. It was
oh
like,
my God, wait.
No, not like that. Come on.
Horrible
Come
segue, on, not like Scout. That.
But this goes into my second segue of have I ever been caught?
Yes.
So there was, you know, back in the day before mortuaries now just have like the block of the coffins. They just have like a piece of wood. This is what it's going to look like. Here's the wood.
Yes.
Here's the wood. This is
right.
There's a picture.
Yeah.
They used to have the coffins.
Yeah, for sure.
And I had a coffin named Willie that was kind of like my fort that had all my shit in it. Look at Daniel. If you guys can see Danielle's face right now.
Wait, you named the coffin? I'm curious.
Yeah, it was like my fort. It was like my hangout.
I named it Willie.
It was Willie. Yeah, it was Willie. Okay, don't judge me, man. This is why I didn't have friends. I didn't have friends.
Maybe you didn't have friends. Yeah, because you had a coffin in your bedroom.
And I also lived with a bunch of dead people. So yeah, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. So that's why acting was like my fucking playground. Nobody knew about my life.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so there was this, it was a coffin that was like, the low end of low end. Like, nobody wanted Willie. Like, he was not going to go.
It was like the pine box.
Yeah. It was Willie, you know? Yeah. And like, all my stuff was like, you know, if
Jane Doe's go in the pine box kind of thing. Like, no one's there
to. Yeah, a little bit. But like, he was a little bit more bougie than that. Okay. A little bit more bougie than that. And like, you would lift the bottom end of it and like, all my like rock and roll posters were like stuck up on there and everything. And like, anything that like would happen, like, you know, like, if I got in trouble or whatever, I'd go hide in Willie. Or like, you know, if I was crying, my dad needed to find me, my mom would be like, go check Willie. Like, that's where I'd be. So
nowadays, that'd be really cool. People would think you were super cool now.
Yeah.
To have a coffin in your room with like rock and roll posters inside of it.
Thanks. Fuck, well, it wasn't really mine. I would sabotage when anybody, like, I knew everything about coffins, like anything. Like, when sometimes my dad like needed, like, you know, he was like running late or something, I would
do the sales.
I would just like, you know, show them it. And then I'd, you know, like chime on, like, you know, what's good for, you know, I like knew everything, but I would always like make sure they did not purchase Willie. Like, if anybody was looking, I would sabotage that.
Oh, it was
shit.
For sale too.
Yeah. That one was for Willie sale. Was for sale.
Oh, okay.
Willie wasn't really mine, but he was mine.
Okay.
He was mine. The day that he got taken was very sad. And it was like, well, see, I'm making that pilot. This is all about these stories. But anyways, so.
Do you want to be buried in Willie? You want to be buried in a coffin?
No. So a good friend of ours that worked at the mortuary that was like my second grandpa who, you know, passed away.
He got Willie?
We gave him Willie.
Okay.
Yeah, I gave him Willie. He was like my man. So I gave him Willie.
But, so back to masturbation and coffins.
So I went to the safest place. I went to that. And I had my headphones on. So I wasn't hearing anything that was happening.
Right.
Like my father.
Oh, shit.
Fucking bringing people in for a sale. To show them a coffin.
And you were there twiddling your pee. Twiddling your bean.
I'm turning so red right now. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you have clothes? I mean, were you clothed?
I mean, my hands were in my pants. Yeah, I was clothed. And obviously my dad got them out of there and fucking opened that fucking thing. And I was like.
Did he say anything to you? No.
Yeah, he did. I ruined the fucking.
But he didn't know what you were doing.
He knew you were playing
in there. But did he say anything to you about like you're touching yourself?
Yeah.
How old were you? 17. Just kidding.
Yeah, I was 17. I was 17. Okay. Yeah, he did. He decided to give me the birds and the bees talk later on down in the morgue. Well, that's another whole fucking story.
Oh my.
Anyway, it's got tons of those. What about you?
I remember specifically, my mom, this is horrible. She listens to this. I don't know if she had
your mom,
it or
you
I
do
had
remember
it.
That your mom said not to talk about her on this podcast, right?
She has nothing to do with this.
Hey, mommy,
yes,
yeah, mom, I know you're going to still listen to this. Told her and I've warned her.
I know.
Do not talk about you anymore.
I remember it was this vibrator from the Sharper Image. So it was like an actual neck. Like it really was like, it was white and it was small and it had like a little curve to it. Like a little portable thing that you would like just, you know, put on your neck, like right on the shoulder or whatever. And I was like, oh, it's like this. And I was like, oh, that kind of fits right there. Oh, wow. Hello. Anyway, so I remember that was my first like, oh shit, wow, what's happening? What's going on? And then that was it. It was fucking game on. And then I found the...
Isn't it funny? Like after you get itch of it, you're like,
every day,
I'm
all
doing this every day.
Can't wait to get out of school. Oh yeah, for sure. It's all you think about. And then I found the shower head.
The shower head.
But you know, I would lay down in the bathtub. So I would go in the shower. I'd lay in the bathtub. But it would take me so long because it would numb me out that it would be freezing cold. But I was so close. And it was like, I used all the hot water that I was like laying in a freezing fucking bathtub trying so hard. And I was like, just make it happen. Just make it happen.
I'm so sorry, guys, if I'm laughing. Like this whole fucking episode is going to be me laughing.
So I learned to shower first. Yes. And then take care of business after with, you know, and then I was like, fuck. But there are definitely times where it was just too cold. You just are like, I can't. And then you're just angry all day.
Oh my God.
So I think I was like 17, like 16, 17, like right around that. It was one specific house that had the shower head. But I never did it after that. Like after I moved from that house, I never did it with a shower head. Maybe one time like at a hotel or something when I was in my 20s when I was like, okay,
Let's try this again.
Or no shower head and you're like running the bath water. Like how can I get my butt close to enough to it to
the
like
bathtub
to meet to the faucet to like make that situation happen.
Yeah, so. Now it's just like it's so easy. It's just like grab the vibrator. It's like
I know.
You know, those are fun times.
I never humped like pillows or any.
Really?
No, I was always
I was
like
a massive humper.
Oh yeah. No.
I was like thumper. I was just always humping things.
Call you thumper.
Literally, you did it? Really?
No, I found, I guess I just I was more about like the stronger pressure, I guess. No, I was never.
So weird.
I was already humping boys, I think, at that time.
Oh, see, oh my God, my mom, I hope my mom's not listening to this. There was a girlfriend of mine that we discovered. If you hump each other, it works.
It's called scissoring. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we you know, so yeah. Obviously.
Oh my God. Would she get off too?
Yeah. So it was my mom.
Would you talk about it
boss's
after?
Boss's daughter. My mom's boss's daughter.
Of course.
Oh my God. I have to tell my mom this because she's going to fucking hear about this now. Yeah. But it was so funny. So then that was when I experienced my first girl thing.
Oh,
but it wasn't anything naked. It was always clothes on.
Oh.
Yeah. It was always just like, and then it was.
How old were you?
It was nothing weird. I don't know, man. This all meshes together. I probably was like.
Teenagers,
12.
Early teenager, yeah.
Yeah, 12 or something.
Would you guys have a conversation about it after?
I don't remember, man. I don't remember. I just remember the humping. These are all the humping. But I do remember it stopped because she wanted to stop. And I was like, oh shit, okay.
Oh God.
Go back to pillows.
Oh. She's like, scout.
Just kidding. I think that's when we you know, got old enough where we were like, oh, okay, let's like, oh, there's bullies and all that stuff is happening. And you
were
know.
You already having sex with guys before you had your first orgasm on your own?
No.
So you took care of yourself first.
I was having orgasms for years
before you had sex.
Yeah, before that.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So much so that I don't think that I helped me.
Oh.
Right. I don't think it helped me.
Right, right.
That knowledge of what sex was
what
and how
do,
that worked
right.
was not, I was like, oh, I have to hold my weight. It was a lot of.
Wait, what do you mean?
A lot of robots. Well, like, I just, you know, I was like, oh, I gotta, like, I have to, I don't know. It was weird. It was a weird time. I'd like, I just, you know, I don't know. It was a lot easier to just like, hump something and work what's right for you rather than like what's right for them to me. To it was just right. so much
working with somebody else.
I think after that time, I was like, cool. I'm just gonna go hump more pellets. Like, I don't fucking. This is fucked up. What is this?
But we've talked about this a couple episodes ago. You don't. Or have you been? What's going on with your?
Your life now?
Yes.
Yeah, my dude. He's
good now.
We're good. But he's still recovering. I feel so bad for him. I really do. I mean, I remember the first time we had sex. I was like, "Is this okay? Am I hurting you? Is this okay?" I was like, "Baby, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you. I'm fine. I'm fucking fine." I'm like, "Okay, I'm worried now. No, I'm worried."
Oh my God. So, David, last night he took a shower, and then, we actually listened to one of the episodes together for the first time.
What?
Yeah.
So we're driving back. I still won't let Tom listen to this fucking thing.
I asked if he's listened. He's listened to all of them.
Tom?
But he's been so good about it. He hasn't been like weird or said anything or like had anything weird about it, which has been great. That's like big progress, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, I've talked about all kinds of naughty stuff and he's not, you know, been weirded out by any of that stuff. No, he was just, you know, it's funny. The one he listened to was the one we were talking about. The chick was like, I've been married and not having a lot of sex. And should I go through my man's phone or whatever, you know? And you were like, oh, hell yeah, I can't, you know, whatever. And I was like, no, have an adult conversation. So we were talking about the move recently and he messaged me and he was like, so, you know, we haven't really had like a talk about like, are you cool with it 100%? Like, I don't want you to be moving because this is where I would like, are you really into it too?
Amazing.
And he's like, I wanted to make sure that we have an adult conversation about the move. And I was like, oh, someone's listening to the podcast.
Oh,
he's like,
God.
Really listening to it and taking it in. And like, it was great. And then last night, obviously we had sex last night and
the
kids
took
are finally
a lot
better.
More in.
And, well, he got out of the shower and like got in bed and he's like, so like trying to be all like, you know, whatever. He's like, get over here. And like, was, you know, like he really like paid attention and, you know, and listened. And so I'm kind of glad that it's working out that way. So,
wow. Okay. You know? Oh, I love that for you.
I was like, hey, if it works in my favor.
Yeah. Why did we do this podcast? For our relationships.
Yes.
Do we have time for one more?
Yeah,
or should we?
No, go for it.
Okay. Okay. So let's see here.
I've had too much coffee today.
Okay. So then I'll talk a little bit. So this is kind of first, this is from, Sinister, Jay Sinister. Mm. So we're gonna answer the second portion. First, you two are amazing.
Thanks, Jay.
Openness and honesty that you both give us. My question isn't an easy one to ask.
Uh-oh.
And I completely understand if you both would rather not discuss it. Scout, I remember several years ago, a story about you going missing or running away. I remember you being found or something, but nothing about what happened. I was curious if that was a story you were willing to talk
about.
That
was right around the first Halloween, wasn't it?
No, man. That was like right when I did sleepover.
Okay.
So I think I was 15 or 16.
Maybe you told me about it when we were doing Halloween.
Yeah, probably. Because it was, you know, it was a really embarrassing time for me. And I didn't realize how massive it was going to be. So here's is what has happened. Okay. Yeah. So I came from like this really rough childhood with my biological mom and all of that and sexual abuse and all of that. And my dad and my stepmom got custody of me when I was like 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of introduced into this acting world, like really, really fast after dealing with all that trauma.
Who got you into it?
Was my stepmom and my dad, you know, because they, you know, I
needed that outlet.
Yeah, I needed something. I needed something, and they didn't think anything was gonna happen, and then it did. You know, it was a big therapy for me, like releasing and pretending to be someone else through my childhood really, really helped me. And then it became like, you know, so making that switch as that kid kind of got to me, and then there was like pop singing, and it was like you're gonna be a pop star, you're gonna be a dancer, and like,
oh God,
I didn't want to be a pop star, I didn't want to sing, I didn't want to do any of that fucking shit, but it was like what everybody was pushing me to do, And you know, my mom and I have talked about it. She was really pushing that.
Because Cash Cow?
Probably. And like, you know, Hannah Montana and all that shit. It was like Disney route. And I'm just not, I wasn't a Disney kid.
I just wasn't a Disney kid. I get it.
And I just fucking left.
Yeah.
I just left because I had to go do some fucking performance. And like, and I was just like, I need a break. Like,
where did you go?
How do you say that as a kid? How do you say like, you know, like I didn't know if it was allowed also because, you know, I'd come from the childhood of being sexually abused. I didn't learn that I could just be like, I don't want to do any of this.
Do you think any kids in the business have the guts to say they don't want to do it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't think any of them really want. I mean, you want to do the fun part.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do the other stuff.
So there's that, you know, you really got to make sure that your kid wants to do.
Don't put them in the business.
You know, honestly, there's some kids that I think that are like, I eat, breathe, I need to do this. But like,
Doesn't have to be work though, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it felt like, man. That's what it felt like. I was recording albums.
Oh God.
I would get in trouble if I didn't know the words or if I sounded bad or if the studio session went really bad.
Oh great.
So I just like fucking bolted. I went behind my house and I slept in a bush for fucking 3 hours.
Oh,
I was so tired. I was just so tired. I slept and then I woke up and I grew up in Apple Valley. I went to the skate park. I wanted to be around fucking kids. Out. I slept in the skate park. Yeah. I think I was gone for 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Dude, I was gone. I was like, I was living a whole different fucking life for a bit.
How'd you have money?
I didn't. Like these kids or whatever, like were like taking care of me, like in this. It was crazy. It was. I do not recommend it. Obviously,
not for a
fucking 15-year-old to do that.
No.
But there was just something, you know.
You needed to do it, girl.
I just need, you know. I dyed my hair. Yeah. Like I just needed to like strip away what was happening in my life.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the police found me and I got reunited with my family. And then afterwards our cul-de-sac was swarmed
with press.
I had just done TV, like guest stars and recurring roles and sleepover. Like that was it. That's all I had done. I didn't think it would be a massive thing.
Right.
Like Dr. Phil was calling. He wanted me on the show. Like Oprah wanted me on the show. Wow. And I just was so embarrassed. Wow. I was just very embarrassed. And I just hid for a while. And I remember my first, you know, my parents got an alarm for the house. You know, because they were scared that I was gonna like, and I get it. Like 2 weeks, that's a fucking long ass time.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. That is a very, very long time to like run away. But I remember the first job that I did at 16 was this movie that I did in Bulgaria, and you know that once we got finished filming, I was 16 at the time. You know, the AD was like, you know, we were really nervous casting you.
Mm.
Because of what we've heard in the media, you know, about you running away and stuff like that. So it was like, and everybody would ask me at like, you know, all the kids would be like, you ran away, blah, 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 all this stuff. But I never really talked about it. And I just, cause I didn't imagine it becoming a thing.
Why did your mom continue to have you pursue it then?
It wasn't the acting portion. It was the becoming a pop star.
So it was that part.
It was becoming a pop star and a singer and
it was
pushing,
becoming a star versus
a star
being an actress.
And versus being an actress.
Yeah.
And we later like had that understanding of like, I just, you know, I wanna, if I'm gonna do this, this is a job.
Yeah.
I'm a child.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm getting my GED so I can work as an adult now. Like I'm an adult.
Yeah.
This is my job now that, you know, kids go to college to discover what they want to be.
Yeah.
I'm learning this at fucking 15 years old.
Yeah.
I need a second. And what I don't want to do, I don't want to do it.
Right.
Like, you know.
Good
so,
for you.
Yeah. So I just needed to check out for a second.
Good for you.
So there you go, guys. There you go. I finally talked about it.
Whew, there it geez, is. Jeez, girl. Oh, shake it off. Shake
all
it
right.
off.
All right.
I can go on and on and on about child actors. I would say, I love you. Screen Actors Guild, the only actor that employs children, only union that employs children. Mm-hmm. Only children's union. Okay. So speaking of, this story, so I'm feeling myself like trying to calm myself down because it really bothered me. It bothered me on many different levels. It bothered me that I didn't know about it.
Okay. I wonder if I know about it.
Because this is something that we should have known. So there was an HBO documentary that came out, HBO Max, at the end of this last year, called Adrian. And there's this remarkable actress, director, writer named Adrienne Shelley, who had apparently committed suicide. I think it was 2000. I'm just going to read this before I explain it so I don't get anything wrong. So this is just an article that I pulled up from The Guardian, written by someone named Adrienne Horton. So the documentary, so it's kind of a little bit long, but I'll see if I can jam through it pretty fast. Documentary, she's more than just a murder victim, the life and death of filmmaker Adrienne Shelley. The HBO documentary Adrienne, directed by the late artist's husband, explores the life, murder, and legacy of the writer and director of Waitress. Did you ever see Waitress?
Yeah.
So the co-star is Adrienne Shelley, and she also was the director.
Okay.
And she wrote it.
Okay.
And, you know, it's Broadway and it's like,
I saw it on Broadway in New York.
Whole huge thing.
Yeah.
So the
London. New York.
Oh, you saw it in London.
Yeah.
The sad thing is that this was her legacy, and she was murdered, and nobody knows that side of the story. In the documentary, people are waiting in line in Times Square to go to see it. And her name is, you know, right up there on the marquee, and everyone in line, they're like, do you know Adrienne Shelley? And they're like, no, I don't know. I don't know who she is. It's like, this is her, this movie, this Broadway show, this world exists because of this woman that nobody knows about.
I have no idea.
It's fucking tragic.
Wow.
Put my glasses on so I can see because my ass is old. Okay, so Adrienne Shelley was an actor, writer, director, a doting mother, loyal wife, a vibrant friend, a committed artist who grew up from performance to playwriting to film, finally coming into creative bloom when her life was tragically, brutally cut short at age 40. She died mere weeks before the indie film she wrote and directed, Waitress, got accepted to the Sundance Film Festival.
Oh, my God.
The romantic dramedy starring Carrie Russell went on to become a sleeper hit and spawned the hit Broadway musical of the same name, the first with an all-female principal creative team. Shelley never got to see it. On the afternoon of November 1st, 2006, she was strangled to death by 19-year-old construction worker named Diego Pilco, after she walked in during his attempted robbery of the West Village apartment she used as her office. Pilco staged her body like a suicide, and she was found hours later by her husband, Andy Ostroy. If it weren't for Ostroy's doggedness in disputing the initial suicide ruling and the identification of Pilco's shoe print in the dust of Shelley's bathroom, the killing would have probably gone unknown and unsolved.
Whoa.
The grim details of Shelley's death are handled bluntly up front in Adrienne, a new HBO documentary directed by her husband as part of a loving remembrance of his lost wife, mother, and relentlessly creative soul, and part exploration of navigating unfathomable grief with a small child. Shelley and Ostroy's daughter Sophie was just shy of 3 when her mother died. The 100-minute film opens with the home footage of a buoyant Shelley at a Halloween party with Sophie the night before her death. Then cuts to news coverage that presumed suicide, an assumption Ostroy immediately rejected. From the day she died, he said he was determined to find out what happened to Shelley, an early muse of indie filmmaker Hal Hartley and later Sundance darling, and to make sure she was never forgotten. It really was just a desire to humanize Adrienne, bring her back to life, and show the world that she's more than just a murder victim. She was the wife and a mother and a daughter and a sister and a friend. So the vision for the film was always very simple: life, death, and aftermath. He said life was clear. He kept a trove of home videos on top of the many clips from Shelley's films, starting with her debut in the lead opposite Robert Burke in Hartley's The Unbelievable Truth in 1989, born Adrian Levine in 1966 to Elaine Langbaum and Sheldon Shelley Levine. Mm-hmm. Shelley raised on Long Island, was a natural and enthusiastic performer. She performed early and often in school plays, studied film production in college before dropping out a year later to pursue a career in Hollywood. So she started college and then was like, mommy, I want to do this. Yeah. And her mom, who's lovely, said, go, you need to go do this. So blonde, petite, doe-eyed, disarmingly emotive, Shelley found quick success along with Hartley covering magazines and booking numerous underwritten roles. By her late 20s, she'd grown jaded with expectations and rampant sexism in Hollywood. In old videos, she talks about pressures of the industry to be fuckable, to say yes to everything, to stay hot or relevant. Mm-hmm. And she says, I quote, I think I spent a lot of my 20s as if I was in some dark adventure of some kind, not really, really feeling myself alive. And I feel like a real desire to not live my life that way anymore, she tells a camera on her 30th birthday in 1996. She helped found a theater company and started writing her own material, staging her first short play in 1993. The film survey of her personal archives recounts Shelley's greatest desires to find a life partner. She met Ostroy through a dating site in 2001 and to become a mother. Sophie was born in 2003. Waitress, written when Shelley was pregnant, was her creative darling, the culmination of years of work and frustration. Hold on, let me flip this page here. Numerous friends from her childhood through the set of Waitress recall Shelley as a unicorn, an alien, an old woman in a tiny, beautiful body, special. Adrian was like no one else you'd ever meet in your life, said Ostroy, echoing similar sentiments from Carrie Russell, Paul Rudd, Cheryl Hines, Nathan Fillion, Burke, her mother and her brothers, and many others. When you were in her presence, you really felt wow. So basically, late in the film, at an unspecified date in 2019, it actually shows her husband going to the correctional facility that her murderer was at. And he sits down across from her and shows him photographs of the things that his daughter has had in her life, her first bike ride, her first this, her first that, all of these wonderful things that her mother got to miss out on. And he just says he wanted to really, the point of the interview was to get the truth of what happened that day, which he did get.
He did. Okay.
Yeah. He did.
God, so could you imagine facing?
No.
Oh
no.
My God.
So he also says, and right before he goes into the room, he says, you know, wouldn't it be crazy if like he just like grabbed him, or he like, you don't know what you're going to do when you see that person,
yeah.
You know, and he didn't react the way he thought he was going to react.
Okay.
He also says he wanted to humanize Adrian for him, so that rather than having a lasting image in his head of this panicked woman racing towards him, calling out for the police, he sees a mother, a wife, a daughter, a sister, that he understood all the moments in the last 14 years that Adrian missed, that Sophie missed, that I missed, that everyone missed. Hold on, this printed double-sided. Maybe when he goes to bed at night, he lies his head down and he stares at the ceiling. He thinks about that and makes him feel something that he didn't feel before. So throughout this film, he talks about, let me just tell you what happened on the day. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was the day after Halloween.
Okay.
She's 40 years old. She's got a 2-year-old daughter. And she was writing, and she had an apartment in I think it's the East Village, somewhere in Soho. And, he'd spent a lot of time with her that morning, which he didn't normally get to do, which was lovely for him. And, he said he pulled up and he watched her walk into, the building where she had her writing loft essentially.
Okay.
And, what happened was he was calling her throughout the day, and it wasn't like him to not call. It wasn't like her to not call the nanny. It wasn't like her to not answer phone calls or not pick up the phone. The phone kept ringing. So he called his friend and he said, I think something's wrong. I this is not like her. She's not checked in all day, to check on our daughter, and I need to go. But he has this image of like her walking into the apartment building, you know, and how that lingering on her, the love that he had had for her and felt for her. Anyway, he went and his friend drove him there, and he went up the apartment, and he said he just barely pushed on the door and it opened. And he knew as soon as it opened that he was going to find something horrible. And he went in, and she was hanging in the bathroom from a some kind of rope or something, some kind of knot. I know it was a bed sheet or something. It might have been a bed sheet.
Oh my God.
And he called police and ran downstairs and said to his friend, Adrian's dead. And anyway, they had deemed it a suicide and he fought it and fought it and fought it.
So was there a note or?
No, nothing.
There was just because she was hanging.
Wow. But she was at the height of her career. She was in love with her husband. She was in love with her child. The amount of videos that this woman has with this baby, it's like if you were to.
That's insane.
I love my husband. I'm happy in my career. I love my babies. You would be like, there's no way Danielle committed suicide.
Yeah.
Someone murdered her. There's no way.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
No doubt in your mind. So if the police are pushing, yeah. No, you're going to fucking fight.
Yeah, fucking fight for that shit.
So what happened is the story goes, in the bathtub, I guess she was hanging from the railing in the shower. In the bathtub, there was a footprint with some sawdust. That seemed odd. The footprint, there was a very specific shoe outline in the sawdust that matched, I guess, something outside of the door of the apartment. And there was construction going on in the building. So what happened was a construction worker, thank God for the police to end up figuring this out. Construction worker had come in from, I think it was Ecuador, and this man's mother had spent all this money to get him here, and he needed money. Even though he was working, he needed money. So he was looking through apartments to see if he could rob people. And he said, listen to her, to the door. And when he listened, the door just like pushed open. He didn't think anybody was inside. So he went inside and he went and was rummaging through her purse. She was there and she, my size, yeah. She came out and he ran and she chased him.
Oh yeah. Like what you would do.
100%.
Dude.
And he said that all he heard was the only word he heard was policia, and that she was going to call the police, and he snapped. And he went in and he strangled her to death. So he said he had his hands on her throat and her hands over her mouth. And then when she went blue and dropped, he said, oh my God, I killed her. So he went into the bedroom and he knotted it up. And apparently I guess the police had asked her husband if she knew how to tie this kind of knot. Which he's like, do you know how to tie this kind of knot?
Yeah.
No. It was a kind of knot that you used to tie up hogs with.
Oh God.
Like a slaughter sort of situation. So anyway, they ended up identifying, matching. He was fixing an apartment below. But she fucking ran after him to yell at him.
Yeah.
And he killed her. And thank God he ended up confessing to it when they got him. Of course, they had to get him first. But he thought he got away with it. So she never got to see Waitress.
Oh, my God.
It was
it's
a few weeks.
One of my favorite plays.
So he had to go to Sundance. So imagine.
No, uh-uh.
Imagine you're sitting at Sundance in this theater with this beautiful movie with your mother-in-law, her mom was there. He was there because he had to go and represent her. This is so fucking sad to me. Mm-hmm. And everyone, it's like bittersweet because you're watching her and you're hearing her speak and like she's there. And what's crazy is that he said that he brought her, it's so sad to me. He brought her ashes.
Oh my God.
And he walked down like that early that morning before the movie premiered. He walked down the center in Park City and he just sprinkled her ashes. You're going to love the end. Okay. And it's going to get funny. Okay. Not funny, but funny. Not funny, but funny. He threw her ashes in the air a little bit at a time and a little bit landed on Harvey Weinstein's shoulder.
Ah! What?
And he said, I couldn't help but laugh to myself and think of the joy that Adrian would have found in that happening.
Oh my God.
Because of everything she stood for.
Oh.
And that he knew that she was there with him in that moment.
Wow.
And then, you know, the movie went on to be this huge success without her being seeing what she did and was able to accomplish. And her daughter grew up with a loving, her dad was like, I got this. He's amazing. She's a lovely, she sounds just like her mom too, which is crazy when you watch the footage, but she's so in love. And it's like to have that taken away from you when you're like you, but at the same time you're like, wow. And I've had this thought too of God, like I've got everything I want right now. I'm at the happiest place in my life. So the only thing that I would miss desperately is like seeing my kids.
Oh, Danielle. See, this is why I don't like being so far away from you. I would hug you right now. You're pulling me back to that scene. Oh. I can't. Oh my God.
But you know, it's like, so if we're here for life to like give us this thing, I've gotten all of those feels. It's only going to get better from here. But if it was to end right now, like, I would be devastated because I wouldn't get to have more of what I already have. Not because I didn't get to have what I wanted. Because I have what I want. I don't get to experience more of those days. So just really take that, you know, the life is so short. Take the day to go like, wow. And if it's not servicing you and it's not, you don't have it, then do it. Make it happen, you know. But I watched this fucking documentary and I bawled my goddamn eyes out through the entire thing because of maybe because she's 40 and an actress and was like, and you know, and I shared a lot of the Sam, you know, I was born on Long Island and like, she's Jewish, her mom's Jewish, like this whole, but the fact that nobody knew that you're standing in line to see this movie or you see this movie, you don't know who she is. Mm-hmm. And she shouldn't be remembered as a murder victim. Mm-hmm. She needs to be remembered as this fucking heroine, this woman that created this wonderful piece of art and this beautiful daughter and has this loving husband and a little piece of her land on Harvey Weinstein. And I think just genius. And everybody has these beautiful memories of her. And, you know, she talked about this piece of her not being fuckable. And it just resonated with me because when I tested for, Party of Five. I went to Network for Party of Five. I don't know if I ever told you this story. And I had gone, so guys that don't know, when you test for something, it's like you've gone through so many auditions and then you're like, you got to go through in front of like the big boss, you know, it's, you get to like the CEO and everybody's there. And do I have makeup all over my face, by the way?
Okay, good. You look beautiful.
I auditioned for Nev Campbell's role, right?
Oh, wow.
And because originally her name was Julia and she was written as a 15-year-old, you know, very like nerdy, virgin-esque sort of bookworm. And trying to navigate having younger sister and, you know, brothers and like trying to figure it out. And I had gone in, I think, 4 or 5 times, finally got to Network. And I was told that they loved me. But I needed to come back again with another round of girls because they just weren't quite sure. And the notes from casting were the network just didn't feel that I was fuckable enough looking.
I just shared a story that I found out the reason that I got a role was because it looked like I had had sex before over the other girl. Yeah, I get it. It's fucked up. It's fucked up.
I don't understand.
I don't understand.
So casting told me when I had to come back again, mm-hmm. that they wanted me to wear a sexy dress and heels. And I was really confused by that because the character was talking about in the scene I was doing that I hadn't had a first kiss yet. And I didn't get it. But I did it.
Yeah.
And when I got there, it was me and it was Nev Campbell. And she was wearing a tube top and overalls.
Oh.
And she was, I think, 18. And she had big old boobies.
It was because you looked,
I was like a little girl.
Yeah, you looked like a little girl.
I was, I think, 16?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, she's wearing overalls, yeah. Not understanding, like, I looked so stupid.
Oh, it breaks my heart.
I felt so stupid.
That breaks my heart. That breaks my heart. It's
horrible.
Yeah. You and I have gone through similar stories because we do look young, you know. I went through that with the testing for CW, where it was always
I was told it was not CW material.
You have to make sure you wear the push-up bra, make sure you show chest, make sure you have a winged eye, make sure you have a lot of makeup,
right.
Like always. And then I go there and the girls would look like no makeup, nothing.
I'm
like,
I know.
I'm like, why do I have to like put out my boobies?
To finish this off, the devastating part of this whole thing for me, and we could talk about this because it's something I don't really understand. Maybe you'd have a better idea of it. He is going to get out of jail not too soon from now because he only got 25 years. So he was convicted, sentenced to 25 years with the possibility of parole. And apparently this was in 2007. So before he's 40, which was the age that she died, this man will be released from prison. So how is it that someone, you know, shoots somebody and gets life in prison?
Yeah.
And someone that strangles somebody, which is, it's still killing somebody.
I know. The whole system is messed up.
Gets life.
I can't understand it. I can't understand it. I don't understand it anymore.
Even like attempted murder, you're still trying to kill someone, whether you succeed or not.
Yeah.
What is the fucking difference?
I know. It blows my mind.
Premeditated is different, I guess, like the manslaughter, murder. Like if it's happening, I guess.
And also different states, they all think differently.
Of course.
On these things.
I
just don't understand why we don't have a complete understanding of.
I don't know.
What's right, what's, like, you know what I'm saying?
I'm A-type. I always say like there's a right way and a wrong way. I stop on red, I go on green.
He was 19?
I think he was 19, yeah.
So he was a kid.
I think he was,
the only thing that I could think is that they're looking at his age. But still,
again,
you're an adult.
If you shoot somebody at 19 and you, right now, you shoot somebody, you stab somebody, you're going to go to jail
My dad tries to make me understand this kind of life because, you know, he was a coroner, but he also like worked at the prison as well.
Right.
And he's always like trying to get me to understand both sides of the story. But I'm like, I don't understand how someone can kill someone and then like get away with it.
I don't know.
There's nothing that I can make sense of that. When you said that he didn't give the reaction that the husband was I guess guessing that he would get, what was the reaction that he got from him when he went to the prison?
I think you think you're going to go in and want to fucking kill somebody.
Okay. So his own reaction.
No, the guy was, he wrote him a letter. Mm-hmm. So her husband wrote him a letter saying, I want to see you. And he got a letter back and he read it. Her husband reads it in the documentary for the first time out loud.
Holy shit.
And he says that he does want to meet him. He doesn't want him to come because he doesn't want to talk, but he wanted time because he was scared.
Yeah.
So he wanted time to sort of process. He needed to know when he was going to come.
Did he say in the documentary what that guy said to him?
You see it. They filmed the meeting.
I have to watch this.
They filmed it.
Was it what you would have expected from him as a viewer? Just wondering, like, you know.
It was exactly what I expected.
Really?
And I felt like I understood her husband. I felt like I would have gone in there too thinking, I don't know if I will be able to not kill this person.
Yeah.
But there's such an anger. But then there's like a weird strength and calm that comes over and power that comes over you, I think, in that situation where, you know, you're holding that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't lose control.
Yeah.
Like you're not weak in that moment. Mm-hmm. You're the strong one.
Mm-hmm.
So you think you're going to lose control and you just don't.
Yeah. Damn.
It wasn't a heat of the moment kind of thing. And he said, all I heard was police. And, you know, we speak in Spanish as the translator there. And as soon as he leave, you know, he shows him all these pictures of his daughter and what she's not here to see. And he just keeps, he says, I'm sorry, you know, and he leaves, he gets taken away and he just kisses under his breath. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And, he just said he wanted, but then you're like, God,
you wonder like if this man has killed other people, you know?
No, he hasn't. No. I think he just got caught stealing and he thought he was going to go to jail and he was trying to give money back to his mom that had, you know, given everything she had for him to get to America. And he just got
see,
fucking caught.
Like if I fucking, I don't like, I wouldn't, I would run. Like I wouldn't,
Of course,
I just don't understand how a person can snap like that. Right. Like that's what you do.
I think that's what he wanted to know. He wanted to find out what is going on in your mind that you did that.
Yeah.
How do you become a murderer?
Yeah.
You know?
Damn.
Honestly,
like, trust your fucking gut with that husband. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, to press on.
Yes.
You know?
Everyone.
Like, that pisses me off that they just were like, oh, it's suicide.
You know, when Jonathan committed suicide, I was working on this movie and I had the detectives calling me. They wanted to sit down with me to talk about because there has to be ruled questionable until it's proven that it's a suicide, you know, and they were asking all kinds of questions about everybody that was there that night and about my ex Jeff and my, you know, their relationship as friends and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they didn't want to rule out that it was maybe a murder that was being covered up.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand. It was like, but he's hanging there. I remember like sitting on the tennis court Dick Van Patten. I don't know if you know, you probably don't know who that is. Mm-hmm. Like eight is enough. I think that's his name. Eight is enough. It is an old 80s show. Yeah. I was filming at his house. We're filming at the tennis court. And I was like, I'm sorry, guys. Like imagine like I'm, you know, 26 yeah. and I'm like, guys, I need 5 minutes while you're setting up so I can go take this call. And like, I have to go sit in a court, you know, on a tennis court and like talk to a detective about my friend who just killed himself the night before. And then be like, okay, I'm off that call. So what are we setting up to shoot?
Welcome to an actor. Day in the life, man. Of an
actor.
That's
why when like someone calls out of work because they have a cold, I'm like, oh my God. Fuck you.
You know what I had to go to work with?
Oh my God. excuse me. So, again, those are things that you never want to have to experience. But he just knew, like, he just knew that something was wrong and something had happened that day because it wasn't like her. And you know her. And again, you guys would do it.
Yeah.
You know your person.
Yeah.
You're like, you know yeah. what you know. And it's just so beautiful. And I just really wanted to share who she was. I didn't know her personally, but you know, when you see her, you're like, I know who she is.
Yeah.
And she was ferocious and she fucking fought, man. She fought. And look, you know, look what's come of it. Mm-hmm. It's quite remarkable. And she shouldn't be remembered as a murder victim. She should be remembered as that's who she was, you know. Adrienne Shelley is amazing. So if you have a chance to check it out.
I will. That's what I'm going to do tonight.
Great. Sorry. You're going to call me and be like, fucking hate you.
No, it's so powerful. Because like I said, I went and saw her play in London. That was the only play that I went and saw.
Wow.
So
and this is her husband's first time directing, doing anything like this.
I had no idea. Wow. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Now you're going to see it with different eyes.
You also too, you know, you touched on, because I know you got emotional and you know, our motto that we say all the time is like, you know, you've got one life.
That's it.
It really is really strong to remember that. I'm sure you're going to affect a lot of people that listen to this episode.
I hope so.
Yeah. Oh, guys, thank you guys so much.
Fucking ruin. I hope I just ruined everyone's Monday morning.
No,
wherever.
You know, we're fucking loving doing this, guys. And yeah. Like I said, we're discovering who we are and what this is about. And thank you guys for taking this journey with us.
And I thank you guys. Actually, somebody submitted this, gave me a list of people to check out, and I didn't know she was. And because of you, I was able to sort of Google around and look up some of these stories, and I'm finding a lot of really cool stuff. And I just want to share this picture because it's just a picture of her with her little girl.
Aww.
And it's just so lovely. And it's beautiful. So,
can you share again to, cause I know you know it, cause I know a lot of people are DMing me, asking me where they can submit the questions to.
Podcast@talkscarytome.com.
Okay. Then there's no email.
That is the email.
That's the email.
Podcast@talkscarytome.com.
Great, guys. Thank you again. Yay.
Okay, so we will. Okay.
Do more cases. True crime cases.
Here we go.
And sex and love. Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.